Happy Thanksgiving from Aqua Alex.
You are listening to the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast with Aqua Alex. On the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, any and everything tropical fish and aquariums will be discussed. From freshwater to saltwater, cichlids to clownfish, Aqua Alex has you covered. What tropical fish topic is up for discussion today? Let's find out. Aqua Alex, take it away.
Hello, tropical fish keepers, and welcome to your fish keeping podcast, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, hosted by a fish keeper for the fish keeper. I'm your host, Aqua Alex Cardinelli. Today, I show my appreciation and thankfulness for all my fish keeping listeners, those who tune into Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast episodes. I'm going to do a show that has been requested over and over again. I've been asked by numerous people over the years to do a show on one particular fish. A fish that is seen everywhere in the aquarium hobby. A fish loved by kids, teenagers, females, males, college students, and the elderly. A fish you can find in every single pet and tropical fish store. A fish that for years and years has lived in glass bowls. Nowadays, keeping this fish in a bowl can be frowned upon. Today, there are desktop aquariums made for this fish. I am, of course, talking about the betta fish. Bettas are one of the most well-known fish and perhaps the easiest fish to keep. Today, I'll be talking about the betta fish. I will discuss everything you should know about bettas, so that you can have fun caring for and keeping your betta. On the show today, I will discuss the history of bettas in the aquarium hobby, caring for bettas, feeding, maintenance, tank mates, etc., and I'll give my thoughts on if bettas belong in glass bowls. So, let's go ahead and get started, shall we? Let's begin with the history lesson on bettas. The betta got its name from an ancient clan of warriors called the Betta. The fish were given a combat name after the fighting fish became popular in the mid-1800s. In fact, the sport became so popular in Thailand that the former king of Siam had it regulated and taxed. Speculators of the sport based their bets on the bravery of the fish rather than the damage inflicted by the victor. The betta was first discovered in Southeast Asia, making its home in rice paddies, drainage ditches, and the warm floodplains of the region. The betta became accustomed to frequent storm flooding and devastating droughts. The cyclic drastic changes in the environment helped the fish to adapt, becoming a true Libranth fish. A Libranth fish has the unique ability to breathe oxygen directly from the air and also take in oxygen from its gills. As a result, bettas and other Libranth fish can survive for short periods of time out of water and, if needed, can inhale the air around them, provided that they stay moist. This also explains why a betta can sustain itself in stagnant oxygen-deficient water. Acclimatizing with fish was not what the people of Siam originally had in mind when they started collecting bettas prior to the 1800s. Known as Siamese fighting fish, the bettas of that time were not the same elegant little fish we see today. With much smaller fins and a dirty greenish-brown hue, they were bred for competitive fighting and not for the fame of their magnificent finnage and colors. Native to Siam, now Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, and parts of China, these fish became accustomed to water temperatures that were often at or above 80 degrees. For the children of Malaysia in southern China, collecting these Siamese fighting fish was a favorite pastime. The children would catch as many as 50 bettas an hour from their rice paddies and then conduct fish fights to determine the village champion. Usually, the winner was the biggest fish they caught. Once the wounds healed on the prize-winning fish, he would go into competition again against a new opponent. This pastime diminished significantly when agricultural chemicals and mechanized plowing were introduced for harvesting of the rice paddies. However, the fields were not the only place where one could find bettas. They were also living in watery ditches, stagnant ponds, and gentle flowing streams. Known as placat, which means tearing or biting fish, the wild bettas generally would have short-lived fights of only a few minutes. Nevertheless, once the Siamese started to breed them, specifically for fighting, these matches could go on for hours. The winner was determined not by the wounds he inflicted, but instead by his willingness to continue fighting. The losing fish retreated, and the match was over. Destruction to the families of the men betting on the fish was also substantial, with potential losses as great as his money, his house, and get this, and on occasion, his wife or other family members. Observing the obvious popularity of these fights, the King of Siam started licensing and collecting these fighting fish. In 1840, he gave some of his prized fish to a man who in turn gave them to Dr. Theodore Cantor, a medical scientist from Bangor. Describing these fish in an article 9 years later, Dr. Cantor gave them the name Macropoudis pugnix. In 1909, Mr. Tate Regan renamed them Betta splendens, noting that there already was a betta species with the name Dr. Cantor used. It is believed that Mr. Regan got the name from a warrior-like tribe of people named Betta. By the last quarter of the 1800s, the betta splendens were introduced into France and Germany, and in 1910, they were first seen in the United States. With the variety of colors and fin combinations introduced, these fish were considered to be a different species. Thus, a long list of alternate names was created. Today, bettas are the most popular fish with breeders in the United States and Japan. Commercial betta farms in Malaysia and Singapore breed both the display bettas and fighting bettas, with the breeding of the fighters producing the most revenue. Fighters are often discarded following their matches and new ones are bought, whereas display bettas live up to 4 years. Although betta fish were originally bred for their fighting tendencies, and still are today, they have become more widely sought after for their vibrant colors and showy fins, both of which earned the betta the nickname the Jewel of the Orient. In the wild, bettas only display vibrant colors when they are agitated, but breeders have been able to make the trait permanent and have developed a wide array of vivid hues that are specific to the breed. Bettas are usually available in red, pink, orange, green, blue, black, cream, and even an opaque white. The blues range from very dark to very bright as well as light blue and turquoise. These blues, along with greens, are typically somewhat iridescent unlike black or red. Now let's discuss caring for your betta fish. Taking care of your betta requires a little education and responsibility for both kids and adults. The beautiful betta is pretty resilient and inexpensive to purchase and maintain, and they can bring years of companionship and joy. You should be able to identify the difference between a healthy and a sick betta. This affects what type of care you will need to provide him or her over time. Even when first purchasing a betta fish, it's important to choose one that is healthy. Experienced caretakers, however, may purchase sick bettas to help save them from death and disease. I'm going to go over some common characteristics of healthy and sick bettas, okay? So right now we're going to start with healthy betta fish. A healthy betta should swim up to investigate when you get close to their habitat. A healthy betta should be aggressive and should flare at you or other stimuli. A healthy betta possesses bright colors, especially males. Hungry bettas are hungry and eat regularly, and they have undamaged fins. A sick betta fish has loss of appetite for extended periods of time, is very lethargic and frequently hiding, dual coloring, especially in males, tattered fins with black edges, white growths on body or mouth, swimming abnormally, labored breathing, clamped fins, and bloated. Those are your signs of a sick betta fish. The absolute minimum tank size for a healthy betta is 2.5 gallons, with the recommended size being 5 gallons or more. Larger tanks are easier to maintain nitrogen cycles and temperature and require less frequent cleanings. One of the biggest myths regarding bettas is how they can live just fine inside a tiny bowl or vase. To put this into perspective, you could live / survive inside a tiny wooden box too, if given food and water, right? You wouldn't be very happy or healthy though. Never fill your tank to the maximum volume. Betta fish need access to the water surface to gulp air using their unique labyrinth organ. The labyrinth organ allows them to extract oxygen from the air and not just the water via their gills. This is why bettas don't require air pumps. Also, make sure you have a lid on your aquarium because bettas are great jumpers and may leap right out of your tank. It happens all the time and is a very sad way to lose a betta. Betta fish need natural or artificial light while they are awake during the day and darkness at night so they can sleep. This establishes a regular day and night pattern, regulating their internal biological clock. Plants and other decorations provide shade if they do want to get out of direct lighting for a period of time. Avoid direct sunlight entering your tank because it can quickly raise the water's temperature to dangerous levels and ignite unwanted algae growth. Artificial lighting is recommended, placing your betta fish's habitat away from windows. This way, you control light being on during the day and off at night with the simple touch of a button. Tank mates. Some bettas are too aggressive to live with other inhabitants, but they can play nice with certain tank mates that are non-aggressive and do not possess any bright colors or long fins. The reason the betta is known as the Siamese fighting fish is because of the male's acute aggressiveness. This was heightened from selective breeding in the 1800s and is still part of their genetic makeup. Success increases by adding community fish with bettas in larger tanks that have plenty of spaces to hide. Use an 8 to 10 gallon or larger aquarium to provide enough space for a proper community aquarium. The increased space and larger tanks will decrease the territorial instincts of the betta and may decrease the aggression against certain types of fish. If in doubt, always ask a local pet store employee before you buy a potential community fish. Do not put two males in the same tank because they will fight and nip at each other, likely until one is dead or severely stressed. This is cruel and it should never be done. Males should also never be housed with a female unless they are breeding for short periods of time and then separated. Males will exhibit aggressive behavior against females too. Females, however, can live together in groups of five or more, but the tank size should double to 10 gallons or more. A good rule of thumb is 1 gallon per 1 inch of each fish. If you have five females, each 2 inches, that would translate to a 10-gallon aquarium. A major part of caring for a betta fish involves making sure they are content and not stressed. Mimicking their natural habitat is the best way to accomplish that. Bettas love places to hide so they can feel safe, especially when sinking. Think of hiding places like their homes. Their natural habitat has lots of places to hide, including substrate, rocks, plants, and sticks. Live plants are best for aquariums because they can help remove ammonia from the water. Example, Amazon sword, and they're soft. Don't worry, though. Artificial plants are fine, too, and they are inexpensive and resilient. Their quality has really improved in recent years and look almost identical to the real deal. Be careful with artificial plants and decorations because they can damage your betta's fins. All artificial plants and leaves should be silk if possible. Logs and other hideaways should also be inspected for sharp edges and sanded down if necessary. Betta fish come from a tropical climate in Thailand, so they may require warm water in their tanks. Never let the water in your tank drop below 65 degrees or go above 82 degrees, and try to keep it in the range of 76 to 81 degrees Fahrenheit. This is the temperature bettas are happiest and active at. Water added to the tank must be free of chlorine and other contaminants. If you use tap water, be sure to use a betta water conditioner to remove chlorine, chloramine, ammonia, and other heavy metals. This prevents any potential harm or death. Never use distilled water either, because it has been stripped of all the essential minerals that bettas need to thrive on. Betta fish prefer their water's pH to be slightly acidic. They do best in the pH range of 6.5 to 7.5. 7 is neutral. Some tap water and spring water may be significantly higher than 7.5, which means you should always test your water before adding it to your betta's tank. Consider purchasing a pH kit to keep it in healthy range if necessary. Also consider adding aquarium salt to your aquarium's water to reduce stress and swelling and to promote healthy fins. You should also do water changes on your betta's aquarium once every week. Once or twice a week is good because it will get rid of any ammonia and waste that's been sitting in your aquarium. Part of betta fish care means regular feedings. Betta fish need specific food because they are carnivorous and like meat. In the wild, bettas feed on insects and their larvae on the water surface. replicating their feeding environment and food will keep them happy and healthy. Betta food comes in different varieties, including pellets, flakes, live, and freeze-dried options. The most common ingredients are meat, fish, and shrimp. Do not feed your betta other tropical fish food because they need a specific protein-rich diet. Betta fish can be very picky eaters too. Persistent refusal may mean trying a different brand or blend until you find the right one. Bettas also love treats once in a while, but they might start to prefer them if you overdo it. Freeze-dried bloodworms and brine shrimp are a betta's favorites. Some owners prefer to use freeze-dried bloodworms or shrimp as their exclusive food source. Breeders may also stay away from manufactured pellets and flakes, opting for live foods to prepare for shows and breeding. The most important part, however, is ensuring a rich and varied diet. The above information was taken from bettafish.org, and you know I figured it'd be some great information for today's show. All right, right now it's time to take a short intermission. During this intermission, you're going to hear one song followed by some announcements for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Before we take this intermission, I have a few announcements that I'd like to make regarding next week. We all know next week is Thanksgiving. So, next Wednesday, I'm going to do a special episode entitled Thanksgiving in the Fish Tank, where I will be discussing things that I'm thankful for in the aquarium hobby, things we as fish keepers should all be thankful for about the aquarium hobby, and some other wonderful topics. So join me next Wednesday for Thanksgiving in the Fish Tank. And then on Thursday, next Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, I'm going to release a special off-topic episode wishing everyone a happy Thanksgiving. It will be one of the only off-topic shows that I will release on AHP. So I'll give tips for cooking turkey. I'll share a few recipes, discuss what I'm thankful for, and discuss this year's Thanksgiving football games. That's next week here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Coming up next, I'm going to talk about the forever discussed betta fish debate. Do bettas belong in small bowls or glass aquariums? I'll discuss that right after this, folks.
Yeah. keepers. Do you have a topic you want to hear Aqua Alex talk about? Do you have a freshwater or saltwater topic you want to hear about? Well, contact Aqua Alex at alexgoyankeescardinelli19@gmail.com or hit him up on Facebook, The Aquarium Network, and let them know what topics you want to hear. Do you also have a special guest you want to see on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast? Great! Let Aqua Alex know at alexgoyankeescardinelli19@gmail.com or contact him on Facebook, The Aquarium Network.
Show me Aqua Alex some love. I put a lot of time, effort, and dedication into every episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It's a work of art, a work of spoken tropical fish keeping art. Show me some love by hitting up my Patreon page and donating as much as you can. Your value, your listen, and your support matters to me. So check me out on Patreon.com, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. That's Patreon.com/ Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. www.patreon.com/ Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. The forever discussed betta fish debate. Do they belong in a small bowl or larger community aquariums? For decades and for many years, it was a custom to keep bettas in bowls. Glass bowls and vases are commonly seen housing plants and bettas. You know, growing up in the mid-90s and early 2000s, it was commonplace to see bettas in aquarium bowls. In fact, some were even displayed in glass bowls with decorative stones at pet stores to show how easy it is to keep bettas. Some stores still do this to this day. While it is visually appealing and good to look at, it is not the best choice for a betta. While bettas are extremely hardy and don't necessarily require a filter, I always recommend giving your fish the best home possible. Keeping a betta in a small glass bowl is like putting you in a tiny one-room apartment with little to no access to air and little to no space to move. Would you love living like that? Years ago, my answer would have been yes, bettas belong in aquarium bowls. But now, being an experienced fish keeper with the interest of fish in mind, I don't believe in keeping bettas in anything less than 2 gallons of water. I'm going to explain why keeping bettas in bowls is bad. Here are some reasons why keeping bettas in bowls is bad. The size of a fish bowl cannot accommodate a filter. This is a huge problem because filters oxygenate water so fish can breathe as well as pick up solid waste from the water. It keeps the waste from decomposing and producing chemicals toxic to your fish. No swimming room. Your fish need space to explore their surroundings, so there should be enough room for some hiding places for when they're scared and want to chill for a bit. The size of the bowl makes it virtually impossible to keep a regulated temperature, as it's too small to fit a heater unless you want an overheated tank, and the amount of water is too little for the temperature to stay the same. Also, most pet fish kept today are tropical and need a heater to keep the water warmer than room temperature. The shape of the bowl minimizes the surface to air ratio. This is the proportion of how much water surface is exposed to air as opposed to the rest of the water. So therefore, it is my conclusion that bettas belong in aquariums. 5-gallon aquariums and up work well for bettas. So you can go out and purchase one of those nano aquariums, add some sand or gravel, and some decorations, and that would be a perfect home for your betta. So bettas belong in glass aquariums. It's 2018. There are nano aquariums out there. Get one of them for your bettas, and you and your betta will be happy. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank you for tuning into this episode of the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. I hope you enjoyed learning about bettas. If you don't have a betta, go out and get one and enjoy the ease of keeping betta fish in your aquarium. With that being said, I really appreciate your listening. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed the show and learned a lot about bettas. If you did enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a review for the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Your review helps me better my show. So go leave a review, if you want to, on my iTunes page, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Also, don't forget, we are now on Radio Public, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. We are also now on Patreon, patreon.com/ Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Support Aqua Alex on Patreon. With that being said, thank you so much for listening. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and I'll see you on the next episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. This is Aqua Alex from Springfield, Massachusetts, and you've been listening to the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Good night, everybody, or good day, everybody, or good morning, everybody, wherever you're from. Have a great rest of your day.